Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Sony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
So how's your 2018 been so far?
Oh my gosh, it's been so exciting because, you know, Tony, I got to go out to Jackson Hole, Wyoming for a quick vacation, and that was just absolutely an amazing experience.
Did you do any hunting?
No, but I did go snowmobiling into Yellowstone National Park. We were out for about 12 hours, and it was one of the most beautiful experiences of my life. And to be in the park, I've been going there since I was a little girl, and to be in the park in the wintertime, I've never been there in the winter, always in the summer, and with no one there, it was, I mean, except for a few other snowmobilers and a couple of other, they have like what they call safari trips. But other than that, you know, no one's allowed in the park, basically. So it's really an amazing experience. It was really beautiful.
Two questions.
Sure.
One, how did you get in if no one's allowed in the park? Second question, why were you not chasing tasty little animals around with a chef's knife while you were there?
I was just curious. With a guide, Tony. And no hunting. I don't do that. But I did get to eat some elk, which comes to my first resolution.
Okay, yeah, because I want to hear about your New Year's resolutions.
So you want to concentrate on food and wine resolutions, right?
Yes.
Okay.
While I'm very sympathetic towards any of the others, I'm not interested for the purposes of this program.
No exercising resolutions. I ate elk tenderloin while I was there a couple of times. And so one of my New Year's resolutions is to figure out how I can buy that here and serve it in Baltimore, because it is really, I love venison anyway, and elk tenderloin is really, really good. It's super lean, just has a lot of positive flavor, really good flavor. And if you cook it rare, medium rare, it's incredible. But because it is so lean, you can't take it any further than that, and it becomes really sort of irony
I'm sure
in
it tightens
taste.
Up a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. Yeah, so the texture's not good, and the iron flavor is kind of becomes strong once you...
So elk tenderloin is first on your list of
it is.
Resolutions?
See, I really am a chef. I want to find some great elk tenderloin so I can serve it.
Yeah.
I can't wait. So what's yours?
Mine, I guess, maybe it's problematic. The only word I have down is cognac. So I love cognac, and I never drink any
thing.
Cognac. And I have a little collection of cognac at home. We have fantastic cognac in the restaurants. I've been to Alfred Tesseron's amazing little cognac distillery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had one glass of cognac in 2017.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Especially since you have a bunch in your cellar.
I really have no... I mean, there are plenty of things to drink in my house. But... when I was thinking about what are the things that I love that I have not consumed, that's first on the list.
Okay.
I mean, and you can get Tesseron from 1929, 1953, 1976.
That's so amazing.
53 is my favorite, I will admit it.
Okay, good.
Tesseron. They're all individual giant casks and demijohns, and, you know, the bottlings are all separate from these individuals, so they're very distinct personalities. But... yeah, if you get a chance, you should look up Tesseron.
And what's one of your other favorite cognac houses?
Martell is very good. But the other one's a little bit more normally commercially available, whether it's Martell, you know, Remy Martin, Courvoisier, Hein is an excellent one.
I love Hein. You know I love to cook with Hein.
Yes, you love to cook.
Freaks you out every time I do it.
Because you choose the most expensive cognac to cook with.
But it tastes the best. And I want that for my food. I only put like 2 tablespoons with my foie gras when I make Trina foie gras. So, you know, hey, it's only 2 tablespoons.
Oh, my God.
So, Darroze, is that not cognac?
Darroze is an Armagnac producer.
Okay,
excellent
so
Armagnac producer.
Can we talk about what the difference is between cognac and Armagnac as we're talking about it?
Sure.
Okay.
So, I don't want to give a ton of technical differences.
Okay.
Armagnac is... single distillation. Cognac is usually distilled several times. There's a regulation to exactly how it's distilled, how long it's kept, that it can't be vintage dated. Armagnac is vintage dated typically.
Okay.
So that's one set of things to know. And you can look up all the technical information if you want.
Does it come from the same place?
Close. They both come from the southwest of France.
Okay.
Armagnac is really what you think of as sort of like musketeer country. And cognac is just a little bit north of there, but 2 different places on the map. same grapes that make up the spirit, that eventually make up the spirit, that make the wine, that make the spirit. The thing to really know is, do you like your pastry to be only sweet, or do you like your pastry to be a little savory and have some spicy notes? That to me is the inherent difference between cognac and Armagnac. Cognac has the polish. It is the pastry. It, in that glass, should be the pastry shop and a little tobacco all at one time. And somewhere at distance, when you hold it a little bit away from your nose, you smell the fruit that's there too. With Armagnac, it's much more in your face. To me, it requires more time to age. And it's more vibrant, spicier, snappier. It's less caress on the cheek, more slap in the face.
It's just funny to me that you brought this up, because I have a bottle of Darroze at my house, and I've had it for a while now. And I think I bought it for my 50th birthday, and then I never drank any of it. It's just weird that you were talking about it, because I just opened it 2 nights ago to taste it for the first time.
I'm sure it's been cold enough for you to want it.
And I think, yeah, oh my gosh. And you know, I don't really drink liquor. I never have. It's at some point I started drinking maybe something with vodka in it, but I'm not a liquor person. I love wine. I personally don't really care for beer. That's my problem, not for any good reason. But I mean, you know, I guess as also as a chef, just because my senses are so unbelievably heightened, whenever I smell something with that level of alcohol in it, it blows me away. For me, it's always been hard to get past that. And I found that once I got past that first bit, and then it just became so unbelievably complex and interesting. And I just loved it. So that's kind of cool. I feel like an adult now.
So now that you're an adult, what's second on your list of resolutions?
Okay. Since we're talking about alcohol, I also, when I was in Jackson Hole, talking about liquor, I have never been able to drink whiskey. And so we stayed in a place called Hotel Jackson right in town in Jackson Hole. And it's a new hotel. It's a luxury hotel. And it's just really, I love this place. It is super cool. You walk in and it's very rustic and natural in the lobby. And it's not really a lobby. It's more like you walked into their living room, this like super cool ski house living room or something. Huge fireplace, great high ceilings, lots of glass, lots of wood and beams and great fabrics. And there's this super cozy seating area. And then they have their restaurant is all like in this one area. Is where you check in, a little off to the left, a little lower, and then off to the right is a bar tucked in back by the kitchen, which is a Lebanese kitchen. The chef is from Lebanon, and oh my gosh, his food is so, so good. And it was so much fun to have, you know, really authentically cooked Lebanese cooking. I love that. And then, you know, right off to the right is this cozy seating area, and you can eat dinner there and sit by the fireplace.
There was alcohol in the story somewhere.
Oh, well, all right. So they make all these special concoctions there, you know, putting stuff in little oak barrels. I don't know what they're doing. I don't really know that much about, you know, drinks. But, oh, my gosh, it was their version of a whiskey sour and some special whiskey. And they muddled rosemary in with a little bit of simple syrup. And then it had fresh lemon juice and the whiskey. And on ice, obviously, and it was just super, and garnished with rosemary. It was just really, really good. And it was the first time I had a whiskey drink that I liked. So I've decided that I want to learn more about whiskey and find a whiskey that I really, really like.
What kind of whiskey was in the drink?
I don't know. I'm sorry to say. I did not pay attention. I just, you know, I was on vacation. I was just enjoying it. I did ask them the pours. It was 2 ounces of whiskey, 1 ounce of fresh lemon juice. They muddled the rosemary and then poured in the lemon and a little bit of simple syrup. And he told me that was all that was in it, which is shocking to me because it was so good. I can't believe that's what was in it. But it was perfectly proportioned. I think that was really it.
What you're tasked with, if you want to learn about whiskey, is tasting things. You're going to want to taste American whiskey. So you want to find a rye whiskey that's representative, a bourbon whiskey that's representative. Whiskeys from other places, Irish whiskey, pretty mellow. Canadian whiskey, also pretty mellow. Whiskey from Scotland, which is sort of the origin. And you have blended whiskeys there, and you also have malt whiskey, which is very much individual places and individual signatures. Those whiskeys are much more savory, and the ones from America are much, they come across much sweeter.
Okay.
But it'll be an interesting adventure for you.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun.
To line them up and try them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'd like to do that.
Figure out where your taste is.
Exactly. I think rye is probably not going to be it for me, but we'll see. Yeah, it'll be fun to go through. What's your next resolution?
On my list, it's make more varied pasta at home.
Oh, good. Yum.
I mean, and it's also, at the exact same time, it's to get my oldest daughter involved. She's 4, and she's pretty precocious 4. She loves pasta. Lots of kids do. But been trying to figure out how to get her involved.
Okay.
So this past Sunday, I found the best producer of dried pasta that comes to the U.S. is Rustichella d'Abruzzo.
Okay.
In my opinion, anyway. So whenever I see it in a store, I always buy some, frankly, because I'm happy to cheat and use dried pasta.
I love dried pasta. There's nothing wrong with dried pasta.
Well,
I like both.
You can really precisely nail the
especially if it's good dried
cooking
pasta.
Texture.
Sure.
But I'd never seen that they had cannelloni.
Oh.
And I thought immediately, now there's a project for Dell and I.
It's fun.
So she got up on a chair next to me. I made a forcemeat with ground turkey, ground duck, a little bit of cooked chicken breast, rigotta, lots of parmigiano.
Oh, gosh, that sounds good.
Yeah, a little nutmeg.
Fun.
And made that forcemeat, ran through the processor a little bit to get it to a nice texture.
Uh-huh.
The turkey and the duck I had cooked, rendered fat, and seasoned with a little bit of fennel seed and with sage and a little rosemary and a little bit of garlic and a little onion. So that is a lot of things, obviously, all in that forced meat. So we took baby spoons from her little sister and turned the cannelloni up on its side.
Oh.
And she was able to help fill. She filled about
That's
half
good.
Of them.
That's a good prep person.
Of the cannelloni. Well, yeah, she knows how to handle a baby spoon, I'll tell you what.
Uh-huh.
A lot better than Dad does. And filled the cannelloni for me.
That's good.
And then we have tomato sauce in the summer. And just made a quick bechamel, but with a lot of parmigiano in the bechamel.
Mm.
And, you know, lined them up in a baking pan.
And
I tell you what, I think she was pretty darn happy to see them come out of the oven. To put them in there.
That's exciting.
To line them up and to put them in there.
Yeah.
And So I want to do more varied pasta at home, pasta al forno, this time of the year. Boy, what a great thing to do.
Okay.
It's also nice. Honestly, I could have done that in the morning and then baked that and just warmed it back up. I think I want to make lasagna with her. I want to make a particular kind of lasagna from the Marche with her.
Okay.
We'll see how much she likes chicken livers.
Well, she's going to be a good cook pretty soon. That's a great
experience.
She will.
She's a good eater.
A little child.
She's a good eater. I think she probably ate 6 or 7 pieces of
what?
Cannelloni, yeah.
That's great.
That was rich, too.
Yeah, I bet. Well, especially when you said bechamel with cheese in it. That's definitely.
Well, hey, you got to gotta be a little comfort in the comfort
You're
food.
You're making me hungry. I love pasta. Oh, my goodness.
So.
All right. So one of the things I really want to work on is foraging. I really want to. As a chef, I want to learn more about the process. It kind of scares me because I don't, you know, want to bring anything home that's not. I'll practice on myself, but I really want to learn how to forage for mushrooms.
Chef dead for mushrooms.
Yeah, right. And look for mushrooms in particular, especially since I'm sure that
you live in mushroom country.
Well, yeah, I do, and I have a decent amount of land, and there has to be mushrooms on my property. I've seen some growing. But I want to learn more about them so that I can feel confident in picking them.
I bet if you talk to some of the animals that live on your property, they'll lead you to some of the mushrooms.
Okay.
When we come back on Formidable Phone Food and Wine, a little more New Year's resolutions, and of course a chef's challenge in the third segment. All of that and more on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're trying to work our way through New Year's resolutions in regards to food and wine.
Which are important resolutions.
We might actually keep them.
Yeah, it's more reasonable.
We have a shot at it.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned any of those hard ones to keep, like exercise and those awful ones.
Exercise is a great one.
Yeah. For you.
Just.
So what's next on your list, Tony?
On my list, mushrooms.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good
you
one.
You said foraging, but.
Yeah, yeah.
I need to.
I love mushrooms.
Take more great mushrooms. I have access to them all the time.
Yeah.
I don't always take them home and cook them. And there's so many different flavors, so many different tones, so many different ways to express it. And I feel like I've just gotten into a routine of there are two or three kinds of mushrooms that I always cook. And I love them. And also, frankly, my daughter Del loves mushrooms, loves when I do different things with them. But it seems like I'm in a rut of mushrooms as a garnish for duck or for chicken, or mushrooms as part of a pasta. And I don't think I brought home more than three different kinds of mushrooms last year.
And in regular grocery stores, there's not a lot of options for mushrooms. But in some of the more special grocery stores, it is exciting to see that they have maitakes or hen of the woods. And I mean, some of our grocery stores actually have truffles, which is amazing to me. So, you know, you can get good mushrooms if you're not in the restaurant business, as you alluded to, you can bring them home from the restaurants if you want to.
But I've seen in a store, I've seen hedgehogs, and I've seen morels. And morels, you were talking about foraging. Morels you can find in Maryland.
Oh, definitely. Buckets of morels.
This spring, I mean,
that's going to be exciting. I'm definitely looking for morels.
That's
that is going to
way
be my goal.
High on my list. That's,
oh, my God. They're the best. And porcinis. Morels and porcinis. Oh, so beautiful. But I've fallen in love with, I mean, like just about every mushroom that there is at this point. I mean, I can't think of too many mushrooms that I don't like to work with. I mean, even button mushrooms. I mean, if you know how to cook them, which is with something especially like the button mushroom, because they have such a high water content, that is the whole game. You have to work that water content out while you're sauteing them, if that's how you're cooking them.
Without burning them.
It's a long, slow process. I mean, it usually takes us, we make mushroom fricassee for one of our dishes, and it usually takes about 18 minutes to really perfectly cook all those mushrooms to the point of all we have to do on pickup or when we're plating a dish, meaning pickup, we just basically re-caramelize them and heat them, which, you know, in a hot pan takes like a minute and a half. So it is a process. You really have to know what you're doing when you're working with mushrooms, but it's not that hard to figure it out.
I also have it in my brain that I want to do more mushroom-centric dishes, whether it's taking porcini mushrooms and getting them to that good place with a lot of the moisture is gone. And if you remember the old hors d'oeuvre with the puff pastry and the mushroom duxelles, how about very thinly sliced porcinis
in there
and then rolled around.
That would be good.
You know, rolled around sort of like you would a pinwheel and then cut a thin slice and then put that guy in the oven.
Yeah, that would be super good.
Make a little truffle aioli for that.
Mm, yummy.
I want to do more and more mushroom-centric dishes. That's
right. Well, and, you know, one of our restaurants has a wood grill. And if the mushrooms are big enough to put over a wood grill, oh, my goodness.
We always can with the perforated pan.
Yeah, well, true.
We often will do that.
Yeah, or if they are big enough, you can just lay them right on the grill and really smoke them. You can always just loosely lay a piece of foil over them as well to capture some of that extra smoke. And don't overdo it, but, I mean, it is, if you're cooking them over your wood grill outside over coals or wood, you know, you can just put that foil on and capture some of that and really scent them. And then you can chop them afterwards. And then you could even, you know, pre-prep them that way and heat them up later for dinner. Or if you're doing a party or something and just saute them or heat them in the oven. I just recently had some cooked that way at a restaurant in Jackson, and they were just, it was one of the best parts of our meal. It was a whole bunch of different types of mushrooms. Each one had to have been cooked individually and then combined together, and they were just cooked perfectly. And you can perfume them with a little bit of fresh thyme or rosemary, or you could finish with a little bit of acid.
Mushrooms do love thyme.
Yeah, they do, very much. You could finish with a little bit of acid if you wanted to, or you don't have to do anything. You can just saute them in good oil or good butter and salt and pepper. They are amazing on their own.
What's next on your list?
I can't help but think about my garden, especially since, you know, today it's oddly warm, and then, you know, in a day it'll be 10 degrees outside. But I really started thinking about my garden this morning because I have to buy my seeds and I need to get on that. And I don't
Is this the year you're going to be entirely self-food sustaining from your garden at home?
But I am self-sustaining in that I don't have anybody helping me this year. I've had, you know, someone helping me a little bit in the last, and that person got me started for the last two seasons. And I have some serious things to look up and decisions to make, and I'm super excited about that. So, you know, that is really going to be obviously a huge concentration for me and figuring out how to get the seeds started and, you know, what do I want to buy and just get everything going and then, you know, working on the soil and making sure everything's right. And I really want to build two more beds. I've been saying that for over a year now, and because I'd like to have a little bit more space. So that is one of my biggest concentrations besides my everyday work, is that farm needs to produce more product.
You know, we should tell listeners that if they want to be your farming coach or gardening coach,
I would appreciate that
greatly. To email us at foremanwolf@wipr.org or address any other topic or send questions, suggestions. It's always super interesting to hear from listeners.
Absolutely.
So, but I wonder if you'll get a gardening coach.
Oh, that would be nice. I need it. So I'm excited about that, but I want to grow things that I haven't grown yet. And, you know, even if it's just a little bit of corn, I really just, there's things that I just want to see grow from seed.
May I make a request?
Sure.
Cardoons.
Ooh, okay. All right.
I love them. No one grows them anymore.
Okay, yeah.
There used to be one farmer in Cecil County who would grow them. Then I would often buy them, you know, to do Italian food with. And
I remember.
And they're 7 feet long. I mean, they're crazy.
Yeah.
So I hope you're prepared for that.
I don't know if I have enough room for 7 feet long.
No, well, tall.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's the problem with corn. We wanted corn, I guess, to please your soil, too.
Maybe look up if you can grow corn next to cardoons.
Cardoons, yeah. Well, and, you know, I can always plant things outside of where my beds are, too. So I just have to... I have to figure it out, you know, and I need to start planning. So I'm super excited about it. I can't wait. I mean, it's really been an amazing experience for me as a chef to grow things from seed and see how it really works and the beauty of something that is just freshly pulled from the garden. Just, you know, I've always loved everything about food, but that just kind of joy of going out and saying, oh, well, this is ready right now, so I can take this to the restaurant and then what I get to do with it, I can do whatever I want with it. And it's just as perfect as it can be, as fresh as it can be. A zucchini can just kind of be amazing. It's not amazing if it's a couple of months old in the grocery store, you know? It's amazing if you pull it right out of the ground.
Sounds like something that was talked about at an EST seminar back in the day. Anyway.
What's your next one?
For me, it's Asian food education. I have pretty darn good working familiarity with a lot of Western European food.
Uh-huh.
I know a decent amount about American food and South American food.
Yeah.
But my wife is a person from Hawaii who grew up cooking and eating a lot of Asian food. Those are ingredients that land in my house all the time, and they're super interesting. And I've spent no time there. And there's an incredible array of ingredients, tastes, balance points within the cooking. I'm excited to learn about Asian food more and more. And also have this neighbor who's a great friend, who's a terrific amateur Japanese chef.
That's handy.
It's a good neighbor. It's not particularly food that I'm inspired to cook. I don't have command of it, but I want to know about it. I want to understand more and more why it works. I think understanding it may help me understand the cooking that I'm much more familiar with, much more completely, if that makes any sense at all. And I like to eat.
Right. Good.
But that's it. That's definitely on my list.
So my next couple involve traveling. Big surprise. I really, really, really want to go to Mexico. I've never been there. I absolutely want to experience different regional cooking in Mexico. And I really, really want to go to South America, to the regions where I haven't been as well. Ecuador, Peru, I want to go to the end of Argentina. You know, you and I have traveled all to Buenos Aires and Mendoza. I want to go down, you know, to Patagonia and really,
where all the Swiss immigrants live.
I just want to experience the cooking of the whole country and of Argentina.
Argentina is huge and
it's
varied.
A big country, exactly. And I'd like to go back to Chile too. So I would like to really firsthand experience the food of those cultures. And also, you know, I have some friends there and Colombia as well. So I would like to visit people that I know and also experience the food. So I'm absolutely doing that. I'm actually quite excited, really, really excited about the opportunity to get to do that. So that's big on my list.
You have an agenda worked out?
No, but I have part of it worked out for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that will be enlightening for me, I think, quite frankly.
I think so. For the girl that when I met her didn't like cilantro and didn't like...
Who are you talking about?
Chilies at all.
We were talking on the trip about how my friends that I traveled with were from Michigan. And, you know, having grown up half of my life and childhood in northern Indiana, very close to actually where my friend lives, she and I went to college together. That's why we travel and are best friends. And we were talking about how when we were kids we hated fish. And we've talked about it on the show before. And it's just, I mean, I think that's what's so great about traveling is getting to eat food from its best place. And also,
yeah, that's all I ever eat in Spain is seafood and ham.
I mean, oh my gosh, the coastal seafood that we've eaten in Spain was mind-bogglingly good. It was so fresh, right out of the water, to have seafood that fresh. But I'm getting off track. But my point is that, you know, just having any opportunity to travel to another country to experience another person's culture through their food is, to me, a window into real life.
That's an incredibly honest way to gain an understanding.
Yes.
Of culture, of people, mm-hmm. even if you don't have the language.
Exactly.
And you get to eat, which is always good.
Which is awesome.
It's funny that our things line up the way they have in order. You said foraging, I said mushrooms.
Yeah, that is funny.
You said travel, I want to stage, and I talked about this all last summer and I didn't have a chance to do it. I want to stage a proper Argentine barbacoa.
Oh, yeah.
Parrilla.
At my farm.
At your farm.
Yes, it's going to be so fun.
And I even talked to
Ooh.
And I talked to our fellow Colby about trying to have an iron worker build essentially a big teepee for me so we could hang meats from it over the fire that was built into the ground. Imagine essentially the framework of a teepee made out of iron.
Yeah.
So that you could hang things into the fire or over the fire that's built, dug into the ground, okay, over those coals. And that also that you had something that was sort of like a griddle top partway down that teepee that you could toss vegetables or fish or like an entire cooking apparatus.
Well, we have the start of it.
Yeah.
We've started it. You know, we've got part of that going.
But an entire cooking apparatus.
Oh, we need the iron work. Yeah, we need the...
I want to do that and surround that.
Tony's going to come and take over my tables. Farm.
No, no, but that's...
Oh, but, you talked about doing like 50 people or something. I'm like, my God, I don't want 50 people at my farm, but it would be fun. It would be fun.
Maybe, tell me when you go to South America.
Oh, you're going to just go do it without me?
You never know.
No. All right.
You never know. That's. I'll leave some wine behind for you.
Uh-huh, you better. Well, that's cool. That did go hand in hand there.
Yeah. So what's on your list?
Increasing my knowledge of champagne and increasing my cellar with grower champagnes.
Oh.
I love these guys that are making champagne from their own grapes. I just respect that greatly, especially since there aren't that many houses that do it.
No, and that there are more and more over time. Some of the new generation of winemakers
have gotten involved.
Or newer thought. But that's one of the most interesting things is figuring out where the fruit's coming from, exactly what, you know, who has what parcels where,
right?
Because they give such very different characteristics. Who's growing what grapes in what place and what they do with it. It's an incredibly complicated little matrix of possibilities. And it's very, very interesting to see it and to learn it through the humans that navigate one particular part of that matrix.
Well, and I also think there's just no better way to understand than to go there. So that just means I have to go on a trip to Champagne. That's my other goal, is the, you know, sort of Latin America trip and then go to Champagne and just like dig back in and really meet some people that, you know, we haven't met or whatever. I just want to learn more about it and be there and experience it and to be in Champagne. I mean, I learned so much from the trip that we took this past year. You know, getting to see the hill sites and understanding where the river is and what that means to the grapes and what the land actually looks like and what that soil feels like and, you know, understand just, you know, being in the Coir again and seeing the chalk. And it's just, it's a fascinating world. And it's so, and it's so far north. You know, I think it's just fascinating. This place that, you know, is that far north is growing this amazing thing. And
yeah, no, Champagne is on the edge of wine possibility.
Right.
And that's one of the,
it's amazing.
The tension in the wine reflects that particular tension. Well, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we have a few more resolutions for you. And then a chef's challenge, of course. We'll see if Cindy...
Well, Tony will be crying here in a moment. I promise
you.
Oh,
I expect to be so sad. All of that and more on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're trying to get through those New Year's resolutions.
As if it's work.
Well, it's fun to think about what your food and wine goals are. I guess it really is kind of goal setting.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. It's for work. I mean, in the end, it's all these things come back to what we do. And
all for work.
Well, but yeah, it is, because if I travel, it's going to influence my cooking.
Of course it will. Of course it will.
Yeah, don't make me argue with you.
I never make you argue.
So what's your next one, Tony? You have a couple more than I do.
Well, I have a couple of wines I need to be drinking more, tasting more. areas of focus. Where there are more and more changes, where there's opportunity to find and drink great things that have not been either abundant or available for a while. In two areas of white wine. One, which is weird to think about in January, but two areas of white wine. One, you know, I love Austrian wine,
sure.
Especially the whites.
Yeah, yummy.
But that continues to grow. The holdings continue to fracture, and there are new generations of winemakers. And to understand exactly what's happening, it requires more and more tasting. Both the dry Rieslings and the Grüne Veltliner that are grown can be super fascinating, and some of the longest keeping wines in the world for whites. And they're not cheap, but they're not giant money for the very best growers.
That's good.
And I'm very motivated, especially in the region called the Wachau, Wachau.
Well, I want to cook with that, so I can't wait for you to come up with some new things, and then I can make some dishes for it.
I want mushroom-based dishes for Grüne Veltliner and Riesling from the Wachau.
All right.
That's one. Two, Italian whites. Italian whites are not just Pinot Grigio, and it's not just sort of Chardonnay knockoffs. And it's not that there's not excellent Pinot Grigio. You just have to know where to get it from. It's not the Veneto. It's up in the Alto Adige. It's not that there's not excellent Chardonnay that's produced. It's not going to be up north. It's going to be, if you want the West Coast style Chardonnay, it's actually in Sicily where you're going to find it more likely, where you have all the sun. But other very specific whites from around the country, whether it's Falanghina or Greco or Verdicchio, Vermentino, the Torre produces breathtaking Vermentino of great richness. I mean, frankly, they're a very good white chef enough to pop. Only Rias, I think, makes white wine from that area that challenges the quality and interest of the Torres Vermentino.
Okay.
Different grapes, but similar climactically. But that's Italian whites and continuing to work on that. And then Northern Piemonte. And so Piemonte, the Piedmont, the northwest of Italy, around Torino, east and north, east and south is the Barbaresco, Barolo, more famous zones. East and north, you find a lot of little villages, some that are better known than others, like Gattinara, Carema, Lessona, Spana. A lot of these areas, they made the Gran Nebbiolo, like Barbaresco and Barolo.
They grow
Nebbiolo.
Okay.
They've been growing it since Roman times.
Wow.
They were more famous for their wines than the southern areas, Barolo, Barbaresco, when they were producing back in those days. Some of the areas geologically are some of the oldest areas in the world, which is kind of crazy.
That's amazing, yes.
It's like sort of like where the world split and the Alps came from and all this sort of business. Just fantastic to learn about the history of. If you want to learn geological history and how it impacts winemaking, this is the most obscure wine factoid in the entire world. Look up the producer Antichi Vigneti de Cantalupo.
You may have to spell that, Tony.
You look up Cantalupo, Cantalupo.
Okay.
And they grow Nebbiolo, fascinating Nebbiolo. It's not as tannic as Barolo and Barbaresco. If you're a pescatarian, a vegetarian, a vegan, and you want to drink really interesting red wine that doesn't have tannin, that requires a lot of animal fat to balance it out.
Huh. Good point.
It's a great place to go.
Okay.
More and more of the wines are starting to come to the U.S., it is really, really interesting to find your way around that part of Italy and discover growers. But that's something that I have a few in my cellar, a few less than I would like to have. And I've had some with great age. I had 164 Gattinara with you once upon a time.
Yes, I remember.
That was from Antoniolo. That was amazing.
Amazing.
But there are more and more better growers and newer generations of producers. So that's, for me, an area that I want to continue to focus on. And it's not the area just north of Barolo and Barbaresco called Arruero. It's further north than that. It's up near the Lasona River. So
good.
those are my sort of like wine resolutions, areas to focus on.
That's fun.
I have one more.
Okay.
It's not wine.
Is it food?
It's going to bother you.
Uh-oh. Why?
Because... I want to manage salt a little better.
Oh, God. I knew it was going to
irritate you.
Well.
And that's not why I said it as much as that entertains me.
There's always there's good reason to monitor your salt.
Well, you know very well, you've heard me say 1,000 times about the whole, like, you season it before you cook it, you season it while you're cooking it, you season it when you finish it. I just don't think we always have to be as heavy-handed as we are. And I think things should be seasoned. I think a lot of times when you have people's home cooking, things have not been seasoned very much, and that's kind of a shame because they've done a lot of work to produce food that doesn't taste as good as it should, as much like itself as it should. But you also don't want salt to ever be dominant.
No, of course not.
So I want to work to find that balance point.
Well, there's so many other ways to season food, too. So, and we have so many more things available to us. I mean, look how many different kinds of olive oils we can buy now. And it's like olive oil is like sauce. You know, if you buy Sportelletti, like we use from Italy, I mean, right now, this harvest, it's particularly spicy. And then I have to balance that.
It's great.
Oh, my God, it's super good. But it is a little spicy for my cooking. So I have to be careful with that. I have a Spanish extra, a wild
not
Spanish.
Not too spicy for my cooking. Well, no.
So I have a wild Spanish extra virgin olive oil that is gorgeous. It's like fatty and rich and round and
what
so
olive oil
darn
is not fatty?
Good. Well, you know what I mean. It's not as spicy and almost a natural level of acidity, which doesn't exist but feels like it sometimes. So, you know, it's just fun to, I mean, there's so many ways, you know, we can get herbs everywhere now. I mean, the spices are so much better than they used to be 20 years ago.
Well,
you know, grocery stores recognize.
Often fresher.
Exactly. Well, that's my point. And they're searching to find better sources for their spices than they used to because we all care about these things now. I mean, you know, there have been tremendous changes in 30 years ago, 20 years ago, even probably 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and markets, you know, well, in the grocery stores, markets.
The acceleration in the last 10 years of what's available
good stuff
to the general public is
very positive.
Huge.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so we probably ought to do a chef's challenge. Here you go, Tony.
Oh.
There.
Wow. Okay. Me first.
Sorry,
huh?
Just rammed that at you.
Is this a new theme for this year? Me first.
You first.
Exactly.
That's always been the theme,
that's what
Tony.
I'm talking about.
Come on.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh. What you got?
Right.
Can you read that?
Elk tender.
Loin.
Okay. Elk tenderloin. Potatoes. Yukon.
Oh,
sorry. Button mushrooms. Onion, shallot, carrot, garlic. Game stock. made from what kind of games? Sorry, I just game stock. Is it elk stock? Is it
yes.
venison stock?
Venison stock.
All right. It's a little red deer stock. Red beans. Haricot vert. Those little skinny green beans. Brioche, Niçoise olives, Iberico ham, rosemary, Marcona almonds, eggs, milk. So what are we going to make?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
We're all wondering.
What
are you going to make?
Well, it's cold. That one's soup, first and foremost. I want to use that stock, and I want to make red bean soup and season it with a little bit of the Iberico ham, maybe just a sort of fatty nubs, and some of the rosemary, and also the button mushrooms. I have to get them cooked down pretty well, like we were talking about earlier in the second segment.
Sure.
So where we can actually realize some flavor from that. And start that whole soup with the shallot, the onion, a little carrot, the garlic. Then add the veg, then add the stock. And that probably has to be worked for a little while, but that would be fun. You have snacks. You have Niçoise olives and you have Marcona almonds. That's great. And Iberico ham. How about taking the elk tenderloin and wrapping it in Iberico, rubbing it with garlic.
Uh-huh. Good.
And roast that guy at high temperature.
I like that. So a whole tenderloin, you mean?
Whole tenderloin. Roast it at high temperature. Let it cool down, almost to room temperature. Slice it thin.
But you're cooking it rare, right? Out.
Yeah.
Rare. Okay.
The Yukon Golds. What I want, you give me no olive oil.
Well, you have olive oil.
How am I supposed to live?
You have olive oil.
I have olive oil. Maybe something too spicy for you. Maybe a sportoletto. So what I want to do is olive oil crushed potatoes with a little bit of the shallot and just sweat the shallot a little bit. The Yukons in their jackets. Slice those thin and crush them up with the olive oil and a little bit of sweated shallot. And so olive oil crushed potatoes, then thin sliced.
Please don't say crushed potatoes. Why don't you explain what crushed potatoes means?
You take a potato masher and you crush them up.
All right. Okay.
You're not making them smooth and pure. You're making them rough.
Okay.
With the skins and with a little bit of the sweated shallot.
Good explanation.
So the haricot vert, I guess you serve on the side of that. I feel so conservative and old-fashioned putting meat and potatoes and vegetable on the plate.
That's what the old-fashioned chef gave
get a
to get a
three-compartment plate. Yeah. I tell you what else I like to do with some of the Iberico. I like to toast it on brioche. I wish I had a little bit of cheese.
Oh my God, I want that right now. What kind of cheese would you want?
Reggiano.
There you go. You have it then.
Just a little bit of Reggiano and butter. Rub that bread down with the butter. A little bit of Reggiano on that. And then one thin slice of Iberico.
Okay.
Toast that for just a second. Take the chill off.
Sounds good.
Would be worthwhile.
Okay.
All right, Cindy. So here you go.
Okay. Sheets of pasta, ground pork, Roma tomatoes, pecorino, ancho chilies, ricotta cheese, smoked eel, capers, day-old bread. I get to choose my type of bread. Jasmine rice. Yum. Chicken legs, mirepoix, which is carrot, celery, and onion typically, creme fraiche, 2% milk. Why did you give me, what, Tony?
When you look in the fridge and you're irritated.
Because you want me to react. That's what you want. Marsala wine, spice cabinet, broccolini, and blue potatoes. Oh, I love blue potatoes. Okay, so I'm going to do sort of like an open ravioli. And I mean, it's just funny to say that one out loud because that's from a long time ago. So I'm going to use... I'm going to square off the sheets of pasta, and what will end up being is obviously two squares per plate. And I'll work the ground pork by sauteing it with the ancho chilies until it's nice and brown. I will remove the fat from that because I don't want that in my pasta. And then add a little bit of chopped Roma tomato, finish it with the ancho chilies and pecorino, and lay that on as the pasta comes out of the water, you know, drain it, season it with a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper, and then lay down the first sheet, and then put the pork, the tomatoes, the pecorino, the chilies on it, and then you've given me ricotta, which is great, so I'll put a little bit of, you know, just sort of knock a little ricotta cheese around and then put the next layer of pasta on top. And honestly, capers on top of that with a little bit of olive oil would be a nice kind of finish. So that's that. And then the jasmine rice chicken legs mirepoix is going to become its own dish. So I'm going to reserve a little bit of the ancho chilies for the chicken legs. I'll brown off the chicken legs on both sides and really just kind of get that nice and crispy and working, and then finish it in the oven. And with the ancho chilies, just a couple thin slices kind of laid around. I'll put the broccolini in near the end. Actually, I need to blanch the broccolini first, cut it, blanch it, highly salted water, drain it, and then sort of, if it's nice thin slices, I can lay that in with the chicken, make the jasmine rice, which I'm actually going to add the mirepoix to. Just bring the rice up to a boil with a little bit of salt, and I'm going to put saffron in there, and just a little bit of butter in the pot as it's cooking. And the mirepoix, I'll just sauté. I'll do a brunoise, which is the smallest of dice. Sauté the mirepoix, add it to the jasmine rice near the end. The only other thing I have left here is the smoked eel and the blue potatoes, so I'm going to make an hors d'oeuvre with that. And I'll boil the blue potatoes.
The old smoked eel and a blue potato hors d'oeuvre.
Boil the blue potatoes in the skins, then gently remove the skin after they're cooked. Slice them probably about a quarter of an inch thick, and lay the smoked eel. You know, just do a whole platter. Actually, I might reserve a little bit of the broccolini for that too. But do a whole platter with the slices of the potatoes, the broccolini, smoked eel on top, and... the only thing I didn't use was your Marsala, which has no business being on this list because it doesn't go with anything here.
And I thought you were going to say the smoked eel didn't go with anything.
No, the smoked eel I'm actually excited about because I think that would be a really fun way to start, particularly before that pasta. I kind of feel like I've made two different dinners here, you know, because really that chicken
I gave you an extremely randomized list.
It's kind of bizarre, Tony, but thank you.
But that's...
Yes, well, there it is. It's done.
You always do well with the speed round.
I like that. You know, I like to be fast.
Well, I think that's about all we have time for. If you want to reach us via email, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to download this or any other one of our podcasts, please go to the WYPR website, wypr.org, and look for the Foreman Wolf page, and you can find any number of episodes. And if you want to reach Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf or on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
My Instagram is The Real Tony Foreman. Thanks so much for listening.
And happy Sunday.